Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the December 22, 2019 session, focusing on Isaiah 7, verses 10 through 16. Emmanuel. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
We are recording for December 22, which is the fourth Sunday in Advent. So we're almost there. We've almost made it. But to be fair, we are recording this on Thursday, December the 5th, which is a bit earlier. So I'm just really curious if how much percentage-wise would you say each of you has done of your Christmas shopping?
I'm in single digits.
Yeah, I'm with Daniel. Now, my wife, on the other hand, is probably 80% finished.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she gets busy.
Hey, Crystal, if you say 100%, so help me.
I'm done.
Are you really?
I just have to wait. The only thing I have to do is get money out of the bank. To have to get money to two people, I just have to get money out of the bank, and that's it. I am done. That I am so
sick.
Happy.
How much money are you giving me?
We'll talk about that later. No, I just went online. Black Friday and the next day. I obsess. Wow. Go crazy for 2 days and then I always say every year I'm going to be done. And this year I stuck to it. So I'm done.
That's impressive or weird. I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird.
Well, I'd love for you to help me sometime next week.
Okay.
Well, I'm probably about 12%, so yeah, got a long way to go. Well, gift giving is good. It's good to give in this season.
Yeah,
and so we are the fourth Sunday of Advent, the Sunday where we focus on love, and we have a text here from Isaiah, but it also has some interesting connections to New Testament text. So, Bert, could you help us get started?
Sure. Emmanuel, God with us. God is with us. It's one of the most beautiful and powerful promises ever spoken. As children, many of us memorized the beloved 23rd Psalm, and we proclaimed it. We proclaimed the hope of our faith. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Later, when the psalmist asks where we can go that God is not, the answer is nowhere. Everywhere the psalmist imagines going, no matter how far, no matter how high, no matter how deep, God is right there. Knowing that God is with us anywhere, everywhere, all day, all night, is very comforting and reassuring. It gives us hope. Our text from Isaiah 7 includes this beautiful promise found in verse 14. Look, the young woman is with child and shall bear a son, and shall name him Emmanuel. And Emmanuel means God with us. And of course, at the very beginning of Matthew's Gospel, chapter 1, the very first chapter in our entire Christian New Testament, Matthew takes that verse out of Isaiah, puts it into his story, and interprets it into the context of the birth of Jesus. And at Advent, we sing, O come, Emmanuel, proclaiming that in Christ, God indeed comes to us and indeed is with us. Now, of course, the actual context of Isaiah is a bit different. Isaiah the prophet is dealing with political turmoil, and Ahaz, the king of Judah, is worried about his kingdom. Judah and its rival, which includes Ahaz's kinfolk, the nation of Israel, because this is after the split between Israel and into two kingdoms of Israel and Judah. Israel has made an alliance with Syria, and both are threatening Judah. Now, I'll leave it to our listeners to delve into their Old Testament history, but essentially Isaiah tells King Ahaz that his wife, the young queen, is pregnant with a son, which will prove to him that God supports his lineage from David. And sure enough, later on, if we know our history of Israel and Judah, Hezekiah is born to Ahaz and this young woman, the queen. And sure enough, before he hits puberty, before he knows how to refuse evil and choose good, as Isaiah says, the threats of Israel and Syria are no more. But while the historical context of this text from Isaiah is very important, and we would do well to learn it and listen to it, our focus for this fourth Sunday of Advent, the Sunday of Love, is more in harmony and guided by Matthew's proof texting of Isaiah, which points our attention to Mary as the young woman and to Jesus as the child in whom God redeems the world. Surely, God is with us. And when Jesus grows up, where can we go and in whom can we see, or whom can we see that Christ is not there? According to Matthew 25, Jesus says quite clearly, there is nowhere and nobody that Christ is not, especially in the very people that any group, any culture, any society deem disposable. And that's where this becomes troubling. Because one of the most beautiful and powerful promises ever spoken, God with us, can also be one of the most blasphemous justifications for incredible neglect, violence, and horror. Hitler's soldiers invading Russia during World War II wore belt buckles inscribed with the words, in German, of course, God with us. Of course, in the U.S., we attempted genocide against the indigenous peoples across this land, and we did it proclaiming that God is with us, and that God was with us as white colonialists, as we captured and enslaved Africans. In one of the concentration camps, where Jews and Christians and other people of faith were being gassed or literally worked to death, or had medical experiments done on them, again, with many good German Christians' approval that God was with them doing these things, the people who were held as prisoners in those camps wanted to know, where was God? These were people of faith, many of them, and they wondered, did God abandon them? Maybe God was not with them after all, and maybe there was no God to begin with. In one of the concentration camps where Elie Wiesel was imprisoned, a child was being hung, very publicly, of course, for everyone to see, simply for the cruelty and humiliation and intimidation of it all. A living, frightened child, dangling and suffering and dying. And one of the prisoners pointed and asked Elie Wiesel, "Where is God?" And Elie Wiesel pointed at the child and said, God is there hanging with the child. When I sing, O come Emmanuel, this Advent season, and I trust and believe that God is with me in my nice, comfortable home with my overstuffed pantry. When I lay down in my soft bed tonight and I look forward to getting to spend some time with my son, daughter-in-law, and my beautiful one-month-old granddaughter, I'll fall asleep knowing that God is with us. And yet I know there are people in power claiming God is with them who are ripping infants away from mothers, locking children in cages, and sending parents to who knows where. And I wonder if those people can know, the victims, that God is with them. Can they still believe in God? My very incarnational theology agrees with Elie Wiesel. God is there with the neglected and the crying infants and the uncared for children in our detention centers who are being told their parents have left them, and with the parents who have had their children stolen from them, and that God is with the millions of families already on the very brink of disaster in our economy, which favors the rich, in which we are today announced we are having what little measly government assistance they may have will be stripped away from them. I know there are people in tremendous power cutting off these food supplies to the poor families and children in our country right now, and they are being told by preachers that God is with them while they do it. But if I want to be among those where God is, well, it ain't in the halls of power. This is a powerful text. This is a powerful promise, Emmanuel. And for those of us in comfort and who have a little bit of stability in our lives, may we be challenged and discomforted by this promise. And for those who are in their living hell, may they know God's presence is with them. May they hear the promise of Isaiah. Emmanuel.
Thank you for that introduction, Bert. The haunting question in my own mind, as someone who enjoys a considerable amount of privilege as a white male, how have we, and I mean the, you know, the cultural, those in power, we, how often have we used that God with us, and you referenced this, how often have we done that to justify our own selfish motives or unjust actions? And how many times has that caused the person being abused or taken advantage of or neglected or whatever the case may be to question, is God with me? And I guess just what's, I don't know if I'm making sense, but what's rolling around in my mind is the, you know, we have that eternal truth that in Christ, God is always with us. But so often we have, I don't know if I can say this, we've bastardized that sometimes to the extent that it has, we've used it to support our own unjust actions and neglect of others, because we're right. We're doing what's, we're on the side of right when we probably haven't been.
Yeah, I think that hearing you talk, I think there's a difference between God is with us and God is on our side.
Yeah.
God can be present for all of us, but that doesn't mean that God is condoning our actions, if that makes sense. It's so, like, Bert, like, I don't even know what to say, to be honest, because, it's hit me in a place where, you know, when you asked, do the people who are the victims know that God is with them? And that, like, that hits me right in my core. I don't know that they do. Like, when we record on Thursdays, I usually see clients, and I sat with a client today that had no concept that God was with her. She has very little money and really, really difficult home life. And she doesn't get that. And I think about people that are, you know, in even worse situations than her. I feel like it's up to us to live into that. We are made in the image of God. And so I think it's up to us to live into, if someone can't see that God is with them, helping them along the way, bringing that word of hope, that word of showing that love that maybe they can't even fathom because they've been so abused in this life, bringing that to them. And I don't mean, evangelizing and, you know, how maybe I was taught growing up. It's more of, this is the love that God has for you by doing tangible, real things, being a real presence for people, not just, this is going to be kind of probably controversial, but not just throwing money at it or, you know, the whole thoughts and prayers thing. I'm going to say prayers. I mean, prayers are great, but I think there has to be, I think there's some action behind being the presence of God and sharing that love with others. I know I'm kind of talking in circles, I think, but wow. I mean, I think this is a call for us to be present. Mm. And to love.
I was thinking, you know, that the way you interact with your clients, it's not this sort of pat answer, sort of, hey, suck it up, buttercup, because God's always with you, or, you know, hey, everything's going to be rosy, God's with you. It's so much stronger than that. Not only is God with you, but God cares about this. God knows what it's like to feel pain, and God understands. And what's more, God does not leave any of us to suffer by ourselves. Mm-hmm. I just think what good news to hear, you know, from a therapist or someone who cares. When someone displays the vulnerability to share their own story of pain and suffering, to respond with a beautifully redemptive statement about God's care and love and presence.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the words for, like, I think about if any one of us were to remember our most painful moments, and we all have them, I think. Some of them may be trauma, some of them may not, but our most painful, darkest moments. And when we get those in mind, think about, were we certain of God's presence in that moment? I have a few that it wasn't until hindsight that I could say, oh, I see where God was. But I can say that the presence of God was made real to me in those moments from individuals who reached out, from individuals who loved me when I couldn't even see the next step. And that's what I was saying earlier. I think as a church, as the church, I think that's part of our calling is to be those kind of people who, when someone can't see that next step, when someone is locked in a cage, when someone is hurt, that we are there and we're walking alongside them. You've got me fired up, Bert.
Victor, go ahead.
I think that's exactly right, that this passage is a call and a reminder to the church, to the community that says we are Christ followers. We are called to be the presence of Christ in the world. And so the world should know God is with them because the church is there, right? Mm-hmm. And it pains me sometimes whenever we are not able to fully live into that the church isn't there, that people don't see Christians and people of faith as there and with them, especially in the worst of times or the hardest times or the scary ones. But that's our call, right?
Absolutely. And not just the ministers. You know, I mean, I think that that's kind of like a, you know, what Daniel said, I think it's kind of a given if you're called into the ministry, that's kind of like an expectation, I guess, that it would be that. But we're all called by God. It doesn't matter your vocation. As believers, we're all called to provide that presence and that love and that hope.
Viktor Frankl, when he was in the concentration camps, or actually when he was afterwards, and he was writing his book, Man's Search for Meaning, he talks about even in the darkest, most hopeless, God-forsaken nights in those concentration camps, in which the guards would play games with the prisoners. I mean, they would give just enough, barely enough food for half of a person and say, feed everybody in the barracks, you know, and they'd sit back and laugh when the people in the barracks turn on one another to get just a crumb. And the people lost faith and the people lost hope. And Frankl is talking about the ability to keep waking up and believing and having hope, even in those kind of circumstances. And he says, even when you think all is lost and evil has completely won, we can remember those nights when a barely walking skeleton of a man would take his little crumbs and go and give them to someone else. And that's where goodness still lives. And we would say that's where God still is in those camps. And the incarnation, in the incarnate being of someone who is still doing good, even to his own suffering, for someone else, to give hope, even if it's just for another hour or for the night. But, it's been a long time since I've quoted one of my favorite living theologians, Bono from U2. And Bono Bono, everybody's probably heard this by now, but it's been a while, so it's worth repeating again. Bono famously once said, God is in the slums. God is in the cardboard boxes where the poor play house. God is in the silence of a mother who has infected her child with a virus that will end both their lives. God is in the cries heard under the rubble of war. God is in the debris of the wasted opportunity and lives. And God is with us if we are with them.
And this is the fourth Sunday of Advent, the Sunday of love. And if what you're describing, Bert, isn't love, I don't know what is.
Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is never self-serving. Somebody said that. Somebody named Paul, not Bono. Bono's name is Paul, but another Paul, not named Bono. Love is sacrificial. And 1 John says God is love. So love is with us. It's revolutionary. The Advent message is revolutionary.
If we have enough courage to live it. I think it's radical and it's terrifying. Like, I think that's what, when Advent comes and you're thinking about sweet baby Jesus coming in the manger, you know, but you get these prophecies and they like kind of slap you in the face. I mean, it's like, this is how to live. But it is a challenge. You know, you would think, oh, just love. But that is such a challenge, I think, especially in our culture that's caught up in who's right and who's wrong and, you know, a million other things other than what really matters. And I think maybe we would do well in Advent to go back and read Love is Patient, Love is Kind, and try to live that out in Advent and every other day. But it's hard. It's not an easy thing to do.
Well, we started off in my introduction, reminding us that Isaiah is talking to King Ahaz in a political kingdom. And the son mentioned there, or the child mentioned there, was probably the son of Ahaz, Hezekiah. So I want to close by reading a couple of paragraphs from a commentary on this text, Isaiah 7, 10 through 16, from Dr. Barbara Lundblad. I think that's how I say it, or how she says it, from Union Theological Seminary. And she points that where many of us talk about God with us for political power, for military power, we want a vengeful God who is with us to crush our enemies. She says, God's sign of a child surprised the king. King Ahaz. God's sign of a child surprised a king. God's sign of a child surprised an unwed father named Joseph. This sign matters in a world that continues to worship a vengeful God who will crush our enemies for us. But seeing the child as sign of God with us gives us a different picture. The word comes as a child who can be received and cannot hurt us, a word that does not make us afraid. We long for the anger of God. We're prepared for the anger of the God, and we think that God has a right to God's wrath. But what is so amazing is that when God does come among us, whatever God's hurt or indignation, God comes not with violence, but as a child, vulnerable to our hurt. On this last Sunday of Advent, may we recall all these images as we sing, O Come, Emmanuel.
Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thanks.
Find more information about this podcast, as well as videos and teaching resources for this session at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.